This episode of Agave Road Trip is brought to you by FlaskFineWines.com. Now, you might think from that name, FlaskFineWines.com, that they sell fine wines, and they certainly do. But they also have a selection of uncertified heritage agave spirits. You know, the stuff we talk about almost every episode. You live somewhere where it's tough to find mezcal, let alone uncertified agave spirits? Stick around after this episode to find out how FlaskFineWines.com can help you get the good stuff. But for now, strap yourself in for another episode of Agave Road Trip. I am Lou Bank.
I am Chava Periban.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the podcast that helps gringo bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico. And today, Chava, I want to jump deeper into the 400 decisions that mezcaleros make during the process of creating these beautiful spirits.
And this is quite a specific one, but I think we agree that in very mysterious ways, it has a great effect on the final product.
And Absolutely.
And it's just basically that moment between you roasted your agave, you're about to mill it, and what happens in between, right?
Yeah, well, that's just the key. You use the word moment. And certainly if we're talking about the evolution of the human species or the evolution of the world itself, then we are talking a moment. But sometimes that moment will be a month or more.
If we're talking about human evolution, maybe 2,000 years. But
But that's what I'm saying. It's all perspective. So I guess you could say a moment. But really, like, to me, the fascinating part is you sometimes you don't even pull the agave out of the oven, right? So Del Maguey has this tobalá expression. It fascinates me that the mezcalero leaves the tobalá in the orno, in the oven, underground for 30 days after putting it in. 30 days!
Yes, and then we asked about that to Felix Angeles, and he was like, no. That is horrific. The smell that is going to come out of that is going to be terrible. But then again, like, whose nose are we to trust? Either that producer or Felix's nose.
Well, and yeah, you know, this is something that we see a lot, right? When we travel around rural Mexico, is this person's doing that? That's wrong. This is the right way. Because then Felix does something that nobody else we've talked to has done, which is, yes, he'll let it sit for 30 days, but above ground. Right?
yeah, but not every type of agave.
Yeah, we were very specifically speaking with Felix about the jabalí. And the jabalí is this legendary agave that for decades, hundreds of years, people thought you could not use it to make spirits because it foams so much. When you're fermenting, when you're distilling, it foams.
Which is mutant behavior by all means, but it's also every time we ask to any producer about jabalí, they will always shrug. They're like, oh, another freaking gringo that is looking for the jabalí. It's like it has become this treasure hunt where everybody really wants some jabalí. And just the producers are like, it has the worst efficiency ever. It's a pain to mill. It's a pain to work with. And the foam, just the, like, I even with when we're in Mixteca Alta, when Jesus Franco, told us that once they were carrying the jabalí in the truck, it started raining, and the agave started foaming inside the pickup. And they were like, we hadn't even started to work. It was already making a mess.
Oh, it's the rabid agave. So Felix, when we brought this to him, what he said was, to mitigate that foaming, he will leave the agave out, the jabalí, leave that out for 30 days after roasting and before milling. And he said that that helps to reduce the foam, both during fermentation and distillation.
Let's listen to him first say this, and then I have so many questions about this, because it just really blows my mind from a science perspective. So here's Felix Angeles in Santa Catarina Minas talking a little bit more in detail about the jabalí.
Agave jabalí needs to stay above ground for at least 25 to 30 days, because if you cook it and then try to mill it the next day, you won't get any mezcal from it. There are many agaves that behave like that, and if you don't know their ways, you'll just end up ruining them. The javali foam will always be there, regardless if the agave is sweet or not. When distilling it, depending on how intense the fire under the still is, it will foam up. The bigger the fire, the more foam you get. That is why javali prefers to be distilled with a very gentle flame.
Okay, so, you know, there you go. Like, it's amazing the particulars of how somebody goes about doing the things that he does. And it does. And in this case, I think specifically when you're talking about Felix's process, I get the sense that this is something he figured out, not something that he learned from his father.
I don't know, too, because also, as I was saying, one of my biggest questions is how did they figure out that leaving the agave above ground for 30 days was not only going to mitigate the foam, but also it was going to give them better yields? Because what he said is that a lot of the beginners, they buy this type of agave because it's fashionable right now and people are looking for it. But then they have yields that are completely absurd, and it just becomes... And when I say absurd, is they can get a ton of agave and have 2 liters out of it.
Right.
Which is just economically crazy. So I don't know, Lou. Here are my questions. and I'll share one of your questions, which is like, how did they figure this out? And B, I really do not understand what is the effect of leaving it outside. I said like you'll have some microbial dry fermentation action, but I do not understand why will that give you better yields and why would that reduce foaming at all?
Well, you know, so I'm not certain that it would actually give better yields. I suspect, and this is just a theory, right? I think there's bacteria that's going in and eating some of that enzyme that creates the foam. This is just my theory as a scientist. that you've got this bacteria that's eating
the saponins.
Exactly. That it's eating up the saponins. Thank you. And that's mitigating the foam. And then I would suggest that you're getting the higher yield because before he did this and before he mitigated the foam, you literally were losing the sugars and the alcohols during the foaming, that literally it was blowing out of the container. So it's not actually better yields. It's just you're keeping more of it in the ferment and then in the distillation. That's my theory.
This is the first time that I'm going to take my hat off and give you the scientist badge for today.
I'll tell you, you know, like I may not be the most scientifically studied person, but I think I actually do approach the world in a scientific way, right? I have a lot of questions. I think it's my Jewish heritage. I have a lot of questions, and I'm willing to keep asking those questions until I get an answer that seems plausible. And I think that's sort of what you have to do when you're traveling to these communities because, the lack of communication, not only from one community to the next, but literally from one mescalero to the next mescalero within the same community can be non-existent.
Well, absolutely. And they're always calculating, right? All of them, they think you're asking stuff because you might try to negotiate price later. Like, they know why are you asking those questions? So I don't think it's not only that there's everything is oral history. So of course there are asymmetric versions of stuff, but also think they're very careful. You know, they're really always calculating like who's this guy and why is he asking this and who's going to he go and talk afterwards.
Well, you know, and to your point, that's also, I think, how they approach this entire process. It's not so different, I think, from how I approach the world. When I say that I'm not a studied scientist, I think most of these men and women are also not studied scientists, but they learn from their experience. And so they've learned from experience that they have to be cautious about what information they give out and what it's going to be used for. And they've learned from experience that if they pay attention to the details of things, they might actually find a better route to the end result they're looking for. So, you know, the question is, how does a Felix Anales figure out that he leaves this out for 30 days and he gets this better result, this lesser foam and this greater yield? You know, I think the answer is by trying. You just keep trying stuff. It's sort of how, like, it's sort of how a kid learns to play a video game. You keep hitting buttons until you finally find the right combination. And I think these men and women are just significantly more patient about these processes to do that. But then also, you know, the other side of it is they have these incredible palates that would make any of them, I think, world-class chefs if that was the path they chose, because they have this palate memory that allows them to do these things, wait 30 days, and then find that result, and then remember that that was the thing they did that gave them that palate result in their production.
And also to cross-analyze, because they know that what they did in fermentation, it's being affected by distillation. And that's really hard.
Yeah.
You know, to know, like, some decisions you took really back in the process is now making these other things further away. And the other thing, too, and just talking more about this capacity of their palates, is dry fermentation exists in almost every town that I've ever visited. And there's always the situation where it's like, how much malt would they allow it to be there? There's people that hate the malt. Mm-hmm. We know producers that will never allow for malt to be it. And they will sometimes even
because the malt is wrong. It's wrong.
Absolute truths. Absolute truths. And then there's others that actually like it pretty heavy on the malty side. Even if it's not to reduce foam, or even if it doesn't have a practical application, just the flavor profile that comes out of a longer dry fermentation is more pleasing for them. So,
and it will just be for specific agaves. Like, you go to Victor Ramos's place, and Victor, he'll do it with this Karwinski, but not that Karwinski. It's not even like everyone from that species is going to have the same treatment. And, like, again, that speaks to me to that palate memory that is just so remarkable. And again, to, like, pull back to that 30,000-foot view, it speaks to those 400 decisions they make during that entire process that creates these spirits that are so unique from batch to batch to batch, and yet so delicious in different ways from batch to batch to batch.
Yes, and if we ever do a tasting about this, that I would love to have that. Something that has been dry fermented for 10 days, 15 days, 20 days, 25.
Oh.
And just try the four or five different options.
Once this pandemic is over, that's one of the things that we're going to do. The first things that we're going to do is ask a mezcalero to put that kind of side-by-side tasting together for us.
So excited. Please, beers, die right away. The fastest you can.
Amen. Okay, let's wrap this one up, Chava. I think we've covered it as much as possible. And let's look forward to the next episode.
Adios.
Hang on, road trippers. We're not done yet. We've got an episode of Chava and Lou's Chat Fest coming up.
Hey, Lou. What is it that you're drinking today?
It's a Tobala made in 2015 by Victor Ramos, Chava. It's delicious.
Wow, this is strange. You don't normally drink when we're recording. What's up, Lou?
Well, what's up is we're recording an ad for FlaskFineWines.com, the sponsor of this episode. And we're very specifically recording an ad highlighting the fact that FlaskFineWines.com will ship heritage agave spirits, meaning the stuff that's not certified anywhere in the USA. So I thought it called for a bit of the good stuff.
But I thought you only had good stuff at your place.
Well, that's true. I like it, therefore it's the good stuff. And the stuff I tend to like most is the stuff that is made in super small batches of fewer than 240 liters, then bottled in the exact same form in which it is consumed in the community where it's made, not changing anything to meet the standards of the bodies that certify mezcal, tequila, or the other DOs.
Not that there's anything wrong with all that, right?
Right, not that there's anything wrong with that.
Okay. But people should get to chase those uncertified spirits to see if maybe that is what they really, really like, no?
Exactly, Chava. But if you're outside of a handful of major cities in the USA, it can be hard to find certified mezcal, let alone these small batch releases that aren't certified. That's where FlaskFineWines.com comes in.
FlaskFineWines.com has a selection of heritage agave spirits released by some of our favorite brands, like Malbien, Cinco Sentidos, and Mesonte, to just name a few.
Yeah, and also La Locura, La Venenosa, and Amor Mata, as well as a super wide selection of our favorite certified mezcal brands.
And they'll ship anywhere in the USA.
Right you are, Chava. So, if you're one of those folks looking for heritage agave spirits, or mezcal, or tequila, or really any specific alcohol, check out FlaskFineWines.com. FlaskFineWines.com offers nationwide shipping of fine wines and spirits within the USA, and they're a sponsor of Agave Road Trip.
Thanks a lot, FlaskFineWines.com.
This is Chava and Lou's Chat Fest, chatting you up for 3 minutes, baby. Are you ready to be chatted? So, Chava, in this Chat Fest, you are going to attempt to come up with a subject about which you can chat that I will not have a story that makes you cringe. Am I correct? Is that the goal for this Chat Fest?
Well, that has been my goal for every Chat Fest that we have had so far. And what I'm starting to believe is that it doesn't exist such a thing. Like, it doesn't matter what I suggest or where I want to take the conversation to. And maybe that's a blessing that we talk about agave spirits, that sort of...
It keeps me out of the gutter if I'm talking about agave spirits.
Yeah, because there's like, it's so linked to things that you respect and you have like such strong... like honorable emotions linked to that you just cannot do that. So I need to find that. And I know Pokemon is not going to make the trick. I know. So I need to come up with something, right?
Yes. Yes, you do.
What about, I was going to say laser surgery, but that's definitely going to take you to a horrible place.
Laser surgery.
Yeah.
I've got one laser. It's not even, I'm not even sure if it's laser surgery.
No.
It's not creepy. It's just gross.
Oh, yeah. That's what I didn't want. No, and that was a terrible idea. What about candles?
Okay, do a candle story. And let's see if it prompts something on my end that disgusts you.
But that is the point where I don't even want to talk about things because I'm just scared. Like, I start getting all nervous about it if I'm going to touch some part of your memory that it's going to make something horrible. And it's not even a story about candles. It's just they have a... Oaxaca has a lot of things. One of my jokes about Oaxaca is that it's, if you live there long enough and you're working with artisans, it's like making a PhD on materials and techniques.
Okay.
It's like, it has like such a vast diversity on that. And one of my favorite things they do in Teotitlán del Valle, which is more famous for making rocks, is candles. And you know how Oaxacans can be very Baroque and Rococo in the way they approach making? Like, this is one of the things you say a lot. They never go for the easy route. So usually when you make candles, you work with gravity, right? You sink something in a bucket or something that has hot wax, and then you like start stretching it up and the candle forms.
Yeah.
These guys work the other way around. They drip hot wax on a string and just slowly make that wax attach to the string until the shape of the candle is formed.
Oh, that's lovely.
It's insane. It's insane amount of work, but
it reminds me of a story.
Oh no.
No, it's not creepy though. It's not creepy. I think it's an insight into my personality. The development of my personality. When I was in junior high school, so I would have been, I don't know, like, let's say 11 years old or 12 years old, I had some wax drippings from a candle that I brought in to the school and showed to all of my friends, and I told them that it was wax from the set of the movie The Incredible Melting Man. Because I wanted everybody to come and look at this wax and then be impressed with it. It was sort of a P.T. Barnum thing. Like, it's nothing, but I'll make it into something.
And did it work?
It did. But I couldn't hold this. Like, I thought it was so funny that I had tricked people that I told them I tricked them, which is sort of the self-defeat that P.T. Barnum never suffered from.
Okay, but I mean, this is lovely. You got a story. It was simple. It was short. It did not last 8 minutes. And it was over, and it's done, and we are finally going to be almost at the 3-minute mark with this chat fest. 5 minutes, it's okay. Great.
And nothing vulgar.
Nothing vulgar. Who will have thought? Candles. I'll come with another one someday, sometime.
Sounds good, Chava. Hasta pronto.
Adios. This has been Agave Road Trip, the podcast that helps gringo bartenders learn about agave spirits. Your hosts are Lou Bank and Chava Periban. Sound engineering by Roy Sierra. Theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Mark Rico. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, recommend it to your enemies. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Lou is in charge of our social media, so if he happens to sound like an old man, forgive him. He is one. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pitbulls, Inc.
Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio Network newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the food world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network can drive you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If it drives you to drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly. Eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive or walk. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to get up and stretch every 30 minutes. If you get up and stretch every 30 minutes, do not stretch beyond your abilities. Stay within your defined stretching capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you do not have a doctor, listen to all the shows on the Heritage Radio Network. There has to be at least one doctor among the Heritage Radio Network podcast hosts. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.